from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. The Saudi war on Yemen continues to rage, with the Saudis now firing rockets into its neighbor after Saudi ground forces took losses while engaging the Yemenis at the border. The Saudi Defense Ministry said the soldiers died at the southern Najran border after Yemeni fighters targeted the Saudi observation posts. The Saudi minister said it was the first major attack by Yemeni fighters on the Saudi homeland since Riyadh's airstrikes began last month. Press TV's Khaniz Fatima has more.
The Saudi army has fired a barrage of rockets into neighboring Yemen after it lost several soldiers in border clashes with Ansar Allah fighters. The Saudi forces reportedly launched 20 rockets into several regions in Yemen's northern city of Sada. The shelling comes after the Saudi Defense Ministry announced the deaths of its three soldiers near the southern Najran border. It confirmed that the troops were killed after Yemen's Ansar Allah targeted their observation posts. The ministry also admitted that it was the first major attack by the Ansar Allah fighters in the kingdom. Riyadh has so far lost at least a dozen soldiers in border clashes with Yemen's Ansar Allah fighters since it launched its aerial aggression.
It was a bizarre spectacle at the UN Thursday. Samantha Power, the U.S. permanent representative to the UN, who was hosting a public discussion criticizing North Korea's record on human rights, ordered the sound engineer to shut off the microphone while the representative from North Korea got up to point out the horrible record of the U.S. on human rights.
Every day we hear the human rights violence cases in radio and televisions. These number one leads are just a bit of icebergs among the human rights violations committed in the U.S. every day.
Please shut the mic down since this is not an authorized presentation. If we could ask the acoustic people.
The act of racial discrimination.
Please ensure that the microphone is not live. Thank you.
During the staged event at the UN, featuring some of the U.S. government's favorite North Korean dissidents, the country's representative rose and demanded an opportunity to rebut. He was told he would have to wait until the presentation by Power's chosen panel had concluded. He got up to make the statement anyway. The U.S. representative then threatened to call security on the North Korean diplomat. When her aide promised him a chance to speak, he stopped. And then Power said he had forfeited his right to speak.
Okay. Can we go forward, please? Again, you will have a chance to speak. Thank you.
No, he's had his chance.
Okay. All right.
All in the name of human rights. Thousands rallied worldwide to celebrate International Workers' Day, or May Day, the largest labor holiday in the world. We begin with this report from RT's Anastasia Cherkina, who was at the massive May Day rally in London.
Well, we're in the heart of the May Day march here in London, where so far, of course, the protests have been peaceful, although there have been certain altercations and scuffles breaking out between a smaller group of protesters and police. And so some of these altercations have been taking place, whereas the march itself is quite peaceful so far, of course. Continuing, and of course, Labor Day is traditionally a day when anti-capitalist campaigners, unions, and workers come out onto the streets to speak up for their rights, and that's exactly what's happening here today. Take a listen.
Trade union movement is one of the only democratic organizations in the country who really speak on behalf of working class communities and on the communities who are having to face austerity, face cuts, face police oppression.
And of course, lots of different concerns and issues being discussed here on the streets of London today, but organizers are bringing more attention and prioritizing, first of all, the issue of austerity. There have been lots of cuts taking place in Britain throughout the last several years. Also, they're talking about the TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, bilateral trade agreement being worked on by the EU and the US, and protesters here are saying that this potential agreement would have a serious blow to democracy, giving big corporations superpowers over governments. They're saying that this agreement could really get in the way of having more jobs available and other issues. Another topic discussed here is racism, because of course anti-immigrant sentiment has been flying high in political circles here in the UK, and people here protesting are basically saying that this has been causing xenophobia and racism in the UK. And certainly we do know that police have been gearing up here for thousands and thousands of people showing up. The protest is still continuing. The bigger part of it is still going to take place a little bit later, so we'll be bringing you all the latest details as they unravel.
In some countries, demonstrations turned violent as police attacked the workers' rallies. South Korean workers were attacked by riot police in the capital, Seoul, during a May Day rally challenging the government's labor policies. Thousands of riot police used buses as barricades in Seoul to block more than 10,000 workers who were marching towards the office of President Park Geun-hye. In the U.S. NATO ally Turkey, May Day demonstrators seeking to rally in Istanbul's main square faced water cannons and tear gas from police. CCTV's Clint DeLoach has more.
Turkish police have used tear gas and water cannon to disperse May Day protesters as scores head towards Istanbul's Taksim Square. The police moved in on the protesters close to the Bosphorus as they tried to march on the iconic square. Tensions have been running high all morning, with activists refusing to accept a ban imposed by authorities on demonstrations at Taksim Square. Even before the police moved in on the protesters in the district of Beşiktaş, Istanbul's police chief said 136 people were arrested at various points throughout the day.
In Ukraine, more than 1,000 supporters of the Communist Party gathered in Kiev, despite the authorities banning May Day demonstrations and the Communist Party in that city. At least 1 million Cubans rallied at Havana's Revolution Square. The Cuban Workers Confederation said the rally reaffirmed the Cuban people's determination to continue fighting for socialism. Huge rallies were also held elsewhere across Latin America, including in Venezuela, Ecuador, Bolivia, Nicaragua, Argentina, and Brazil. Tens of thousands of workers also staged demonstrations in Athens, Greece. That rally was held amid a train and tram driver's strike, disrupting the capital's metro and national rail services. May Day marches also swept across Asia, the Middle East, and Europe. Prosecutors in Baltimore announced that they were filing charges, including second-degree murder and involuntary manslaughter, against the six officers involved in the death of 25-year-old Freddie Gray, who died of a severe spinal injury on April 19th after his spine was nearly severed while in police custody. This was the Baltimore State Prosecutor, Marilyn Mosby, making the announcement Friday.
Findings of our comprehensive, thorough, and independent investigation, coupled with the medical examiner's determination that Mr. Gray's death was a homicide, which we received today, has led us to believe that we have probable cause to file criminal charges. The statement of probable cause is as follows. On April 12, 2015, between 8:45 and 9:15 a.m., near the corner of North Avenue and Mount Street, Lieutenant Brian Rice of the Baltimore Police Department, while on bike patrol with officers Garrett Miller and Edward Nero, made eye contact with Mr. Freddie Carlos Gray, Jr. Having made eye contact with Mr. Gray subsequently ran from Lieutenant Rice. Lieutenant Rice then dispatched over departmental radio that he was involved in a foot pursuit, at which time bike patrol officers and officers Miller and Nero also began to pursue Mr. Gray. Having come in contact with the pursuing officers, Mr. Gray surrendered to officers Miller and Nero in the vicinity of the 1700 block of Presbury Street. Officers Miller and Nero then handcuffed Mr. Gray and moved him to a location a few feet away from his surrendering location. Mr. Gray was then placed in a prone position with his arms handcuffed behind his back. It was at this time that Mr. Gray indicated that he could not breathe and requested an inhaler to no avail. Officers Miller and Nero then placed Mr. Gray in a seated position and subsequently found a knife clipped to the inside of his pants pocket. The blade of the knife was folded into the handle. The knife was not a switchblade and is lawful under Maryland law. These officers subsequently removed the knife and placed it on the sidewalk. Mr. Gray was then placed back down on his stomach, at which time Mr. Gray began to flail his legs and scream as Officer Miller placed Mr. Gray in a restraining technique known as a leg lace, while Officer Nero physically held him down against his will until a BPD wagon arrived to transport Mr. Gray. Lieutenant Rice, Officer Miller, and Officer Nero failed to establish probable cause for Mr. Gray's arrest as no crime had been committed by Mr. Gray. Accordingly, Lieutenant Rice, Officer Miller, and Officer Nero illegally arrested Mr. Gray. Upon arrival of the transport wagon driven by Officer Caesar Goodson, Lieutenant Rice, Officer Nero, and Officer Miller loaded Mr. Gray into the wagon, and at no point was he secured by a seatbelt while in the wagon, contrary to a BPD general order. Lieutenant Rice then directed BPD wagon to stop at Baker Street. At Baker Street, Lieutenant Rice, Officer Nero, and Officer Miller removed Mr. Gray from the wagon, placed flex cuffs on his wrists, placed leg shackles on his ankles, and completed required paperwork. Officer Miller, Officer Nero, and Lieutenant Rice then loaded Mr. Gray back into the wagon, placing him on his stomach, head first, onto the floor of the wagon. Once again, Mr. Gray was not secured by a seatbelt in the wagon, contrary to a BPD general order. Lieutenant Rice then directed Officer Goodson to transport Mr. Gray to the central booking and intake facility. Following transport from Baker Street, Mr. Gray suffered a severe and critical neck injury as a result of being handcuffed, shackled by his feet, and unrestrained inside of the BPD wagon. From Baker Street, Officer Goodson proceeded to the vicinity of Mosher Street and Fremont Avenue, where he subsequently parked the wagon and proceeded to the back of the wagon in order to observe Mr. Gray. Despite stopping for the purpose of checking on Mr. Gray's condition, at no point did he seek nor did he render any medical assistance for Mr. Gray. Officer Goodson returned to his driver's seat and proceeded toward the central booking and intake facility with Mr. Gray still unsecured by a seatbelt, contrary to a BPD general order. Several blocks later, Officer Goodson called into dispatch that he needed to check on the status of his prisoner and requested additional units at Dolphin Street and Drew Hill Avenue. Officer William Porter arrived on the scene near Dolphin Street and Druid Hill Avenue. Both Officer Goodson and Officer Porter proceeded to the back of the wagon to check on the status of Mr. Gray's condition. Mr. Gray at that time requested help and indicated that he could not breathe. Officer Porter asked Mr. Gray if he needed a medic, at which time Mr. Gray indicated at least twice that he was in need of a medic. Officer Porter then physically assisted Mr. Gray from the floor of the van to the bench. However, despite Mr. Gray's appeal for a medic, both officers assessed Mr. Gray's condition, and at no point did either of them restrain Mr. Gray per BPD general order, nor did they render or request medical assistance. While discussing the transportation of Mr. Gray for medical attention, a request for additional units was made for an arrest at the 1600 West North Avenue. Officer Porter left the vicinity of Dolphin Street and Druid Hill Avenue to assist in the arrest of another prisoner at North Avenue. Despite Mr. Gray's obvious and recognized need for medical assistance, Officer Goodson, in a grossly negligent manner, chose to respond to the 1600 block of West North Avenue with Mr. Gray still unsecured by a seatbelt in the wagon without rendering to or summoning medical assistance for Mr. Gray. Officer Goodson arrived at North Avenue to transport the individual arrested at the location of North Avenue and Pennsylvania Avenue, at which time he was again met by Officer Nero, Miller, Porter, and Lieutenant Rice. Once the wagon arrived, Officer Goodson walked to the back of the wagon and again opened the doors to the wagon to make observations of Mr. Gray. Sergeant Alicia White, Officer Porter, and Officer Goodson observed Mr. Gray unresponsive on the floor of the wagon. Sergeant White, who was responsible for investigating two citizen complaints pertaining to Mr. Gray's illegal arrest, spoke to the back of Mr. Gray's head. When he did not respond, she did nothing further, despite the fact that she was advised that he needed a medic. She made no effort to look or assess or determine his condition. despite Mr. Gray's seriously deteriorating medical condition, no medical assistance was rendered or summons for Mr. Gray at that time by any officer. After completing the North Avenue arrest and loading the additional prisoner into the opposite side of the wagon containing Mr. Gray, Officer Goodson then proceeded to the Western District Police Station, where, contrary to the BPD general order, he again failed to restrain Mr. Gray in the wagon for at least the fifth time. At the Western District Police Station, the defendant arrested at North Avenue was unloaded, escorted, and secured inside of the police station prior to attending to Mr. Gray. By the time Officer Zachary Novak, Sergeant White, and an unknown officer attempted to remove Mr. Gray from the wagon, Mr. Gray was no longer breathing at all. A medic was finally called to the scene, where upon arrival, the medic determined that Mr. Gray was now in cardiac arrest and was critically and severely injured. Mr. Gray was rushed to the University of Maryland Shock Trauma, where he underwent surgery. On April 19, 2015, Mr. Gray succumbed to his injuries and was pronounced dead. The manner of death, deemed a homicide by the Maryland State Medical Examiner, is believed to be the result of a fatal injury that occurred while Mr. Gray was unrestrained by a seatbelt in the custody of the Baltimore Police Department wagon. All events occurred in Baltimore City, State of Maryland. While each of these officers are presumed innocent until proven guilty, we have brought the following charges. Officer Caesar Goodson is being charged with second-degree depraved heart murder, involuntary manslaughter, second-degree negligent assault, manslaughter by vehicle by means of gross negligence, manslaughter by vehicle by means of criminal negligence, misconduct in office for failure to secure a prisoner, failure to render aid. Officer William Porter is being charged with involuntary manslaughter, assault in the second degree, misconduct in office. Lieutenant Brian Rice is being charged with involuntary manslaughter, assault in the second degree, assault in the second degree, misconduct in office, false imprisonment. Officer Edward Nero is being charged with assault in the second degree, intentional, assault in the second degree, negligent, misconduct in office, false imprisonment. Officer Garrett Miller is being charged with intentional assault in the second degree, assault in the second degree, negligent, misconduct in office, and false imprisonment. Sergeant Alicia White is being charged with manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter, second degree assault, misconduct in office. While I am committed to transparency, what I have revealed here today is now a matter of public record. However, the evidence that we have collected and continue to collect cannot ethically be released to the public.
President Barack Obama said it was, quote, absolutely vital that the truth comes out, closed quote, over the death of Freddie Gray. He declined to comment on the case, however, saying that it was his practice not to do so in open cases.
It is my practice not to comment on the legal processes involved. That would not be appropriate. But I can tell you that justice needs to be served. All the evidence needs to be presented. Those individuals who are charged obviously are also entitled to due process and rule of law. I want to make sure that our legal system runs the way it should. The Justice Department and our new Attorney General is in communications with Baltimore officials to make sure that any assistance we can provide on the investigation is provided. But what I think the people of Baltimore want more than anything else is the truth. That's what people around the country expect. To the extent that it's appropriate, this administration will help local officials get to the bottom of exactly what happened. In the meantime, I'm gratified that we've seen the constructive, thoughtful protests that have been taking place, peaceful, but clear calls for accountability, that those have been managed over the last couple of days in a way that's ultimately positive for Baltimore and positive for the country. And I hope that approach to nonviolent protest and community engagement continues. And finally, as I've said for the last year, we are going to continue to work with the task force that we put together post-Ferguson. I'm actually going to be talking to mayors who are interested in figuring ways to rebuild trust between community and police, and to focus on some of the issues that were raised by the task force right after this meeting. Our efforts to make sure that we're providing greater opportunity for young people in these communities, all those things are going to be continuing top priorities for the administration, and we'll probably have some more announcements and news about that in the days and weeks to come. All right. Thank you very much, everybody.
But the president apparently found it easier to comment on protesters in Baltimore earlier in the week when he called those involved in violent acts there criminals and thugs. According to Bruce Dixon, senior editor of BlackAgendaReport.com, the president did so while ignoring the savagery of Baltimore police.
According to the Baltimore Police Department's own story, all Freddie Gray ever did was make eye contact with a police lieutenant and take off running. In 21st century America, though, the relation of young black men to the police is such that when you run like a rabbit, cops will chase you like hounds. When the hounds caught 25-year-old Freddie Gray, they did what hounds do when they catch a rabbit. Baltimore cops snapped Freddie Gray's spine, and they may have inflicted additional torture upon him during a half hour in leg irons in the back of a police van, after which they finally got round to calling the paramedics. This kind of simple, elemental savagery is the ordinary, everyday state of policing, not just in Baltimore, but in 100 other U.S. cities. Black Baltimore knows, just like black Chicago, black Los Angeles, black Philly, Birmingham, Jacksonville, and Detroit, they all know that the courts and the ballot box provide no credible remedies to the scourge of police violence or to the national policy of mass incarceration inflicted upon Americans of African descent. Our black political class was quick to point to the absence of black faces in high places in Ferguson, Missouri. But most Baltimore mayors have been black for a generation, as have many of its top cops. There are black faces in judges' chambers, a mostly black city council, and Maryland has a large and active legislative black caucus. Curbing the cops and winding down mass incarceration, though, is not any part of what our black political class actually does. President Obama is big on poor people remaining peaceful and nonviolent and respecting the law. This is a notion that should either make us laugh out loud or cry. It's hard to decide which. President Obama, you see, also claims the law entitles him to drone bomb hundreds, perhaps thousands of civilians across Asia and Africa whose names he doesn't even know, based upon their profiles or their proximity to supposed terrorists, also frequently unknown by name. The president, along with his outgoing and incoming attorneys general, assure us this is all perfectly legal. We have to take their word for it, because they've made the precise legal language of the rule they says permits this classified, a secret. Along with the president, Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake also drew the line at protesters interfering with the private property of others. This, too, is a joke. The Baltimore PD is one of hundreds of cop shops that routinely confiscate cash and assets with little or no justification from people for its own use, a runaway policy called asset forfeiture, blessed by the incoming Attorney General Loretta Lynch. So let's be clear. When presidents and mayors call for nonviolence and obeying the law and respect for private property, they're appealing to rules they would not dream of following themselves. These are the rules the police and prison state makes for its victims, the rules that hounds make for rabbits. If we no longer intend to be hunted by hounds, we have to start by ignoring their rules, as many of our finest young people are seizing the opportunity to do. The most important lesson of Freddie Gray's death may be that it's high time to stop running like rabbits. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Bruce Dixon.
And finally, to honor International Labor Day, we bring you Billy Bragg's version of The Internationale.
Stand up, all victims of oppression, for the tyrants fear your might. Don't cling so hard to your possessions, for you have nothing if you have no rights. Let racist ignorance be ended, for respect makes the empires fall. Freedom is merely privilege extended, unless enjoyed by one and all. Some are brothers and sisters, for the struggle carries on. The Internationale unites the world in song. So hatred nor walls of stone. Come greet the dawn and stand beside us. We'll live together or we'll die alone. In our world poisoned by exploitation, those who have taken, now they must give.
And end the vanity of nations. We look what earth on which to
that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.